Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your guide to everything new and noteworthy in the world of food and cooking. I'm your host, Cara Rona. Our guest today is Miguel Banuelos, the founder of the fresh Mexican salsa brand, Salsa Pistolero. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Starting a food business, especially in the crowded New York market, is not an easy task. So what made you decide to start Salsa Pistolero, and what's the journey been like so far?
The decision was kind of twofold. One was kind of being tired of the New York rat race, doing the jobs that people do in New York, the creative agency, advertising, marketing, blah, blah, blah worlds. But also seeing those and seeing the things that people were talking about and understanding that while I had all those things in my quiver as possible utilities, I also had personal things that were relatively valuable that other people didn't know about or didn't have that kind of voice coming, especially in New York City. So that kind of all came together, came to a head a couple of years ago. And I thought, you know, if all these other people are doing these things, and even I'm doing these things without passion, imagine how I could do all those things added with a personal passion and a personal reason to do those things. And those things for me were Mexican food, were what I always say is the real reason I do it is not just to give New York City good fresh salsa, which is obviously a very, very important part of it. But it's also to explain to people more about Mexican culture, Mexican food, Mexican traditions, and things that I feel strongly about, passionately about, that I might have a different voice from. So, for instance, in New York City, there's a lot of Mexicans from Puebla or from Oaxaca, which is wonderful. Mexico's a big country. There's a lot of sensibility in New York, especially among the food intelligentsia, that once you know that there's Oaxacan food, then you know what real Mexican food is. My family's not from there. My family's from the north of Mexico. And, you know, there are a lot of food traditions there that are either confused for Tex-Mex and or are part of Tex-Mex, but that world is relatively broad. When you talk about Mexican food, it's a relatively broad thing. So my thing was, oh, I can explain to people, even through knowing all the other things that I know how to do, that Mexican food is diverse, that Mexican regions are different, that there are all sorts of things out there, and none of them are more authentic than the others. They're all equally, you know, specific or special. But, you know, I guess mostly it's encouraging people. Like, find out more, eat more, travel more, see what there is to be seen. You've not exhausted it yet.
A big part of your work is consumer education, especially when, you know, some people don't even realize necessarily the difference between fresh salsa and the salsa that you might get in the paste jar at the drugstore. You make 6 different kinds of salsas. So how do you describe them to people, talk about what salsa might be other than the image they have in their minds, and help them find kind of the ideal salsa of their dreams?
So the first thing is I always explain to people that they have to taste it first, because that's kind of obviously the big thing. But the reason that happens is because the first thing I have people almost say to me every time is, wow, it tastes so different. And I always say, it's really just because it's fresh. There's not extra sugar. It's not vinegared. It's not cooked down to death. You can still taste the fresh onion or the fresh cilantro. And that in and of itself is the beginning of the education portion, because I always tell people, I've never bought salsa. That never crossed my mind, because I've always grown up with my mom making salsa every week or every 3 days or for everything we were going to eat that day. So it never seemed like this kind of thing that you bought and had in the fridge or on the shelf for X amount of months and then like, oh, I bought a bag of chips. For me, salsa is much more expansive. It's both, sure, it's a dip, that's fine. It's a topping, a condiment, an ingredient. It's all those things. And so the reason for having even the 6 that I have is, one, I wanted to run the gamut of spiciness, because I don't believe that it needs to be super spicy. It can be. You know, there's a time and a place for everything. But I also explain that, you know, each one of them has their own, you know, special thing that you could do besides dipping. They all taste great, fine on a chip or whatever. But, you know, the tomatillo is a perfect base. It's really simple and bright and fresh and, you know, citric, but not hot, not overwhelming. And I just, you know, try to explain to people, think about it in terms of almost the palette is already there for you. So you've got one color. You've got the green, fresh tomatillos. What else goes with that? Sure, fish goes with that. Chicken goes with that. But then expand that to, well, okay, that can be enchiladas. That can be a soup. That can be, you know, whatever. Grow from there. And then each one of them kind of takes that to the next level. So there's the tomatillo with avocado, which a friend of mine was like, yeah, that's my salad dressing. And I was like, that's exactly what I'm talking about. Kind of envision it beyond the other things and try to place it alongside maybe other things. So there's a chile de árbol, which is almost more like a hot sauce. So it's thinner and it's zingy. And it's kind of citric as well, but it's got apple cider vinegar and dried smoked chip peppers in it. So that brightness is hot, but it's hot for a reason. It's hot because it's got that bright pepper flavor, that kind of fruity but zingy flavor. And I don't want to dampen that. But even that can be, you know, added with cream and shrimp. That's how I make tacos. It's perfect. It's 5 minutes. It's amazing. But it's also great on eggs. It's perfect hangover breakfast. A little huevos rancheros with the chile de árbol on top is great. But it's, you know, it's that sense of, you know, start with the flavors and then kind of see where you can build out of that. Because there really shouldn't be kind of a barrier that says, this is for this. And a lot of times you kind of need people just to tell you, don't limit yourself. Like, taste it and keep thinking. Keep thinking about this as something other than a chip. And I always explain, there's two, particularly the tomatillo and the ranchera, which I always explain as these are beginnings of ingredients for whatever you want to make. The ranchera isn't built for chips and dip. That's built for marinating. It's built for kind of starting a sauce off. It's got smoked dried mulatto chilies, pumpkin seeds, and honey. So it's a very different flavor from what people are expecting. But it is also, because people think, oh, it's like a mole. And I'm like, well, I respect mole cooks way too much to say that this is a mole. This is not 45 ingredients and it didn't cook for 4 days. And it's very different, but it's that way by design. It's supposed to be simple so you can make it complex. Feel free to add whatever you want. You want to add chocolate to it? Go for it. You want to add chicken to it? Go for it. All those things are available. And I kind of want these to be the launch pad for people, again, to kind of explore not only what their palate can create out of this, but maybe do more research, see what Mexican food flavors this is coming from and based on, and how that's being used to kind of expand your own arsenal of how you might kind of deliver a different meal.
So a big part of that culinary education is teaching people how to use salsa, how to think of it outside of just a dip that you eat with chips. But then you also teach people about the history of salsa. And my question is sort of what makes a salsa, if there are so many different ingredients it can include or not, so many different consistencies it can be or not, you know, what defines it?
So I think the first way to attack that is basically think of the word salsa as the word sauce. That's all it is. So it does have a huge, wide-ranging kind of breadth that you can take under that. But I just did kind of a little workshop class about salsa and trying to explain, you know, the history, the time, what it looks like, all those things. And I find the easiest way to break it down is kind of take three columns of something that is your main vehicle, your vegetable. So that could be a tomato, it could be tomatillo, it could be tomato sauce, whatever that may be. So it's kind of your juicy vegetable, whatever that may be, some sort of allium, it can be green pepper, it can be onions, it can be garlic, it can be, you know, anything that's got that kind of spicy kick to it, which can also include peppers, fresh or not, or the next thing. So that can be any sort of herb. So that could be cilantro. That can be some sort of a vehicle that brings you some sort of olfactory, you know, addition to it, I find gives you that third note that allows for kind of a harmony, a little bit of a harmonic zing across those three kind of pillars. But again, like you said, it is really vague. So where do nuts fit in there? I don't know. Somewhere in the middle. They're a thickener. They change the texture. It's they may add flavor, sometimes sweetness. Maybe it's just density. But any of those kind of additional things are kind of the extra jazz notes at the top of what you're making. And the good part is you don't have to be kind of subjected to those three things. It can be four of them and two of one and six of the other if you want to. But for me, and this is the way I explain it to people, is that if you're looking at making it, the best way to look at it is, again, try to think of the entire palette that you're painting the picture with and think, what should I add and how should I change that? So one of the other things that I explain is a different way to do things, not better or worse, is how you treat each of those vegetables. So, for instance, when I make the tomatillo, I just boil the tomatillos and the onions together. I don't roast them. It's not for better or worse. I just particularly in the spectrum of the salsas that I'm making wanted that one to be lighter and fresher and brighter rather than to be charred. The char tomatillo salsa is wonderful. It's great. But that's not what I was going for. So I explained that that technique also adds that. So now you're adding smoke or fire or whatever it is to add that smoky olfactory note to it as well. So those techniques can also add these kind of extra notes of jazz on top of it. Again, there's no rule. There's no rule that says that you have to char your serrano peppers every time you use them. There's no rule that says that you can't leave fresh jalapenos in something. There's no rule that says don't add garlic to anything. I do some things, I don't do others, but I feel like there's no kind of right way to do everything.
For people who want to try their hand at making fresh salsa at home, what's kind of a basic recipe that you would suggest people start with, and what are some maybe troubleshooting moments or questions you get asked a lot?
Sure. So I will go with two. But two to explain the different techniques that are both simple and easy. So when I do the tomatillo salsa, like I said, I actually boil the tomatillos and the onions together a little bit just because I want to get some of the sharpness off of the tomatillos. I actually leave the jalapenos fresh. I cut them and I de-seed and de-vein them. Now that's one of those tips and tricks that people need to know. It changes everything. I don't do it because I want to take out the spice. I do it because I want the jalapenos to taste more like green peppers.
And I'm going to add one more tip, which is please wear latex gloves.
Always
when you're doing
wear
the jalapenos,
gloves.
Because
yeah.
Every time I don't do it and every time I regret it.
I, for a long time, thought that no, I'm tough enough
right,
to do
no,
it. And then
we're
I realized
not.
That's not even why. It's just basic and simple. You'll thank yourself a million times every time you don't do it. So yeah, I have a box of gloves with me all the time. So that is super important to me to take out those seeds. And again, not because it's right, but because the flavor is so different when you do it that way. And then I just add salt, pepper, a dash of cumin, just because I'm from northern Mexico, and put cumin in everything. And that's it. It's very, very simple. There's not a whole lot going on there. When I show people how to make it, besides the boiling time, it's about 5 minutes. So that, one, that should encourage people that it's really easy. But two, you can see that it's not the same as the second, which is the classic one that I make, the red, which is what made my mom famous, which is what is why this is all important to me. So for that one, I actually roast the serranos ahead of time, take the skins off, and devein and de-seed them. For those, it is very much because of the heat. Serrano peppers are hotter, but the flavor is so good and the smell is so great that I want to concentrate that with the fire and give it kind of that depth and add very little to that. You know, the tomatoes should be very simple. The onions, very simple. The cilantro, and then you're done. And again, your choice on tomatoes is, again, up to you. I find that it's really, really, really really underlined, difficult to find good tomatoes all the time. So the only way to combat that is you have to go canned. And it makes a lot of sense once you do it because they tend to stay together a little bit more. They won't separate as much. And they require a little less time and effort and coddling, especially to get out the right flavor. Because especially in New York City, tomatoes are impossible to find that taste remotely like tomatoes. But again, the difficulty in that one is nothing. It's the roasting of the peppers and the de-seeding and de-veining that take up 80% of the effort. But those things right there, that shows you the same technique with two different kind of additions that change the flavor, the depth, the heat, everything, without really switching it up beyond that. And so I feel like that is the reasoning behind the, you know, you've got basic columns here you can create out of two similar recipes with similar ingredients that will taste completely different.
Miguel, thank you so much for talking with us today.
My pleasure.
This is really great information, and I encourage everyone to try making their own salsa this summer at home. If they're not quite ready to do that, where can people find Salsa Pistolero?
Three spots in Manhattan so far in the East Village. One is ABC Beer Company on Avenue C, Harry and Ida's Pastrami Shop on Avenue A, and Miscelania, the Mexico City-style general store on 4th and Bowery. Coming soon to Brooklyn and perhaps wider, but I'm being very, very cognizant of quick growth. Rather, I'm focusing on the people who need it more than everyone else.
So if you happen to be in Manhattan, you can check out those places. Otherwise, people can go to salsapistolero.com or on social media. I think it's the same at salsapistolero. Thank you so much for joining us. And tune in next time on The Clever Cookster for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.